This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can't see me.
I know,
can you?
You're moving to me.
Can you see me?
Yeah, Dave? You're moving to me. I've got the full
well,
experience.
Well, on my screen, I've just got one picture. Like one picture of me like that, with my eyes closed. Bloody hell.
Pensive.
And yeah, not to worry.
Right.
Lino, how do you work that one out? Not my missus could have played against him. I'm sorry and all this. That's a lot of. You've got to die to get 3 points.
Welcome back to the You've Got to Die for 3 points podcast. My name is David Prutton, the starter, of course, in what is the main course with regards to who this podcast is all about. It is, of course, Neil Warnock. Neil Warnock, hello, my friend. How are you? How's Trix?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, different weather down here at times, but raring to go.
Raring to go, and another week, obviously, to talk about what's going on currently in the world of football. Let's just reflect, though. We're a few episodes in. We had a very special guest last time out in Simon Jordan, a man that you know very, very well. Did you enjoy that episode?
Yeah, it just showed me how he's so clever and articulate. And what I find amazing about him now is the ordinary guy in the street who probably thought when I was managing him that he's this, you know, aloof man who doesn't know what he's talking about and all this and other. It's completely the opposite. He actually comes up with the arguments that the ordinary layman in the street wants to ask. So I think it's gone full cycle, really. He's becoming the layman's expert as well, which I think that supporters love it.
He's got a great way of explaining exactly what he means, which is a great gift to have, obviously, if you are a broadcaster, if you are someone that's in the media, as he has worked his way into it. When you had him as a chairman at Palace, did you see him doing what he does now, broadening it out into the media?
No, not at all. I thought he'd be really successful in the football club. Mm. I mean, the circumstances about the financial drop that happened at that time, he could never envision anything like that. I mean, now, when I watch him, he obviously eats a piece of dictionary every morning for breakfast, because I've never heard anything like his words. I don't even know what some of them mean. I think he's inventing half of them. But nobody dare question him.
The thing is as well, intrigued me when you were talking to him, because being from a similar part of the world as we are, Neil, in that glorious county that is Yorkshire, you come across a self-made man from South London. His dad obviously had a massive part to play in Crystal Palace's history. And sometimes in that, perception can get in the way of what the reality is of your relationship. It seemed to me between you two very honest fellas, that was never a problem. You had something in the middle that you both loved, which was football. And then you had Crystal Palace to move forward, didn't you?
I think it was because when I look back at my promotions, I've had good chairmen, you know. I've had, in most of the occasions, I've had really good rapport and a working relationship with the chairman for whatever reason. All right, sometimes they were really difficult, But I always got on, tried to get on with them, because I felt it was important to me as a manager that they knew the problems that I had as well as the good times. Not just going to a chairman when you want money or you want a player. I wanted to tell them about Joe Bloggs' wife, who's off work this week and who he's got to look after the kids. I know it's silly things like that, but chairmen never get to know about the real life. It's all financial and all this. Whereas I just kept him informed, and I think he really appreciated it. I don't think he'd had any sort of relationship before like that. It was all, you know, let me have some money for a player or tactics or whatever. But I don't think there was anything like that. So it was a new one for him. And for me, just going down to Palace when I did, I would, like I said to you, Dad, I thought I was going to retire when I finished at Sheffield United. I thought that would do me, keep him up and then leave him on and have, you know, ride off into the...
How old were you then?
Into the history book.
Neil, so you were what, in your 50s, were you?
26, so 14, 16, 50s, wasn't it? I'd be... Let me thinking now. I've just got me thinking now, David. It was about 16 years ago. I'm 73, so that's 60, 57.
Yeah. So you were ready. You were done then.
And I always thought, when I started in, because I was 30 odd when I started. I was young. I always thought 55 will be a nice age where I can go and see a few places. I always wanted to go around, not around the world, but, you know, Niagara Falls. I wanted to go to Brazil to see the big, you know, monument there and other things. And so I think if I had kept them up, if I hadn't have had that hassle with the bloody Tevez thing at Bramall Lane, and then I hadn't been Tret, which I thought was a diabolical way that I was Tret, by somebody that I trusted. It just made me want to come back again. And I needed a bit of love, and Simon gave me that. I think that's the problem nowadays. It's all, you know, high profile and everything. But at the end of the day, who motivates the manager? Well, in my case, it was the chairman.
Anyway, let's move back towards the present day. Leeds United scoring a very, very late winner against Liverpool. Jesse Marsh under all kinds of pressure. And he even said himself, he's very front and centre, Jesse, isn't he? He will say, I understand how this game works. Yeah. It's very brutal. You don't win games. You don't keep your job. It was a huge result. And just give us a taste, Neil, as a manager, when it is everybody looking at you, everybody pointing at you, looking at what's going to happen next. You go to Liverpool, you come away with a win.
Well, I mean, the relief, I think when you have been in manager, obviously as long as I have, you've had periods like that. You've had games like that where you just know something important is going on that game. I mean, to go to Liverpool, Jesse would have been happy with a point, absolutely, you know, to move on. It wouldn't have been thinking of anything other. Oh. But to get the response they got was unbelievable. And the relief, you could see the relief in his face. You know, he hadn't won for ages. It didn't, you know, you're playing Liverpool. The thing that pleased me was the lads give everything. You know, they absolutely give everything for him. I just think they're so open because they have a good game like that where they give everything and they're attacked. But they're so open at the counter-attack that, you know, you can see why some games they played really well and then lost a couple of goals. And, you know, I'm not convinced about them at the back. Since even in my time there, there were a couple of, you know, Aylin and Cooper, I know they're regulars, but I wasn't convinced about the defensive side of Leeds. But I love the enthusiasm. And I mean, the goal, the young kid took it brilliant.
Fantastic, wasn't it?
I mean, probably Liverpool should have been out of sight. They missed quite a few chances as well. But you've got to give... I just thought, what a great advert for the game. I looked at that and Liverpool, you know, Klopp's under pressure. Well, not under pressure, but you know what I mean. He's under pressure himself, to himself. It's in his own mind he's under pressure because he wants to win. He's a winner. He's used to that. He's not used to seeing so many chances go, you know, without scoring goals. And they've happened in a few games this year. And it's something that he's not been accustomed to. So he's under a learning curve. Jesse was just relieved to get a result. And I remember a few times, one in particular what I remember, when I went first started in the game, I was at Huddersfield, and we played a cup game against Carlisle, and you know, a semi-final of a Leyland DAF or something like that, you know, one of the Wembley finals. Mm. And we won 3-0 in the first leg, and we go up to Carlisle for the second leg. And I go in the office the next day, and I, the secretary there, I never forget him, Alan Sykes, they were booking coaches.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm superstitious. And I said, what are you doing? What are you doing, lads? Here, we're booking coaches. We've got to order the coaches in plenty of time. I said, you can't be ordering coaches till we get through. We won 3-0, he said. You know, I said, honestly. Anyhow, cut long story short, we go up to Carlisle. We're 2-0 down. Early doors. So they only need a goal. And then my captain comes off. Peter Jackson comes off injured. I had to put a school teacher on. And Johnny Dyson. And we went all the second half. It's still 3-2 on aggregate. And then we have 10 minutes of injury time. And in that 10 minutes, it's probably the worst I've ever felt. Because I thought, if I can get the team to Wembley, I'll keep my job. If I don't get the team to Wembley and we're not doing well in the league, I'll probably get the sack. And that's how I felt in those, you know, even in the 10 extra minutes, that's how I felt.
That was the overriding emotion.
You know, said a few prayers. Yeah, said a few prayers. I'm like, please let us get to Wembley. And we got to Wembley at the end. And it gave me time to adjust, to have the summer and to build a club at Huddersfield, which we got promotion, you know. But that period, and yes, not the same level as what Jesse's going through, or Klopp and things like that. But manager, it's the same principle. You know when there's a crucial time in your club or a game that's a crucial game, and you know the feeling inside. And, you know, Jesse, you know, I think he could have kissed everybody after the game, couldn't he? He knows that that's given him a bit of time, that win against Liverpool and the fans. But I just thought, from a neutral point of view, I thought, what a wonderful advertisement, Premier League.
You mentioned as well Klopp there, because Jesse needed the win for completely different reasons, obviously, given where they are in the league, given the run that they've been on. With Jurgen Klopp... Mm. With Liverpool, and obviously struggling is a relative term when it comes to Liverpool, but they're not reaching the standards that they've set, which, I mean, a team going for the quadruple last season, it has changed slightly. From the outside looking in, and we talk about that game, obviously they got beaten by Nottingham Forest a week before as well. Can you put your finger on an issue that jumps straight out at you, or is it a mixture of different things coming together?
Well, it doesn't matter how much money you've got at the club. When you lose a player like Marnie, you know, he's a manager's dream.
Yeah.
And although you can't say anything, because that's how it is, you know, he wanted to go over to Germany, and you have to let him go and what have you. But when you lose somebody like that, you don't realize, the manager realizes, but the directors and people don't realize. They think, oh, we'll just spend 60 million and replace him. Mm. You don't get that. You don't. It's not the amount of money you spend. It's the actual player that you know as a manager. You know, I always say about my successes when I've had promotion, I've got players that probably didn't get any recognition newspaper-wise, but they were always first on my team sheet every week. And Marnie would have been first on Jurgen's team sheet every week. So to lose him, and then, you know, you've got the best player in the world missing chances, not taking him, didn't look up to speed.
Yeah.
And I thought, when you look at what Jurgen was saying, even now, I agree with him. I think the time to judge Jurgen will be at the end of the season, because they'll still be high up in the league by the end of the season. But he's got to adjust, and, you know, some of the mistakes that they've made, and, you know, the back passes, the goalie dribbling, basic things, really. And the best centre-half in the country, has it a bad spell? And that's what happened. You know, Van Dijk, he just did. Is it a bad spell?
Because he's not superhuman, is he? He's always going to dip at some stage.
No.
Yeah.
Whereas he's been able to lift everybody around him by talking. It looks like he's got enough on his plate to lift himself at the moment. So, but that'll come back. Good players, you know, they have periods, but that'll come back. And I think, you know, you're going to learn all this. You see, as a manager, you only learn through your mistakes. You don't learn when you're winning every game and you make a sub. When you're winning every game, you make a sub and they score two. You know, you can't go wrong. And it's a fabulous game. And everybody, I used to walk around the supermarket. Everybody wants to know you, you know. When I was at Leeds, it made me laugh when I pushed my trolley around the supermarket, Dave. They used to go around that. And then I'd see them go around the next whatever they call them. And I'd catch them. They'd catch me coming around the cornflake counter. And then next time they'd be around the gym. They couldn't believe it with Neil Warnock in the supermarket. But I used to like that. I used to love that.
Well, I've
gone off the subject again.
No. That's the essence of your management style, isn't it? And speaking of that style, do we look at him now?
His aura.
It's an unbelievable aura, isn't it? Do we look at it now where he's in a position where what Alex Ferguson did so well at United over several years, freshened up a team, freshened up a squad, went again. Are we almost at that point with Liverpool? These players that have died for the 3 points that he's demanded of them, is the time to change?
I just think everybody, because it's Liverpool and everybody expected them to be level with Man City at this stage, I think it's so much difficult that, and I think all the media at the moment, because it's Liverpool, let's bash them. It needs rechanging. Mm. He's not doing it. He's not doing it. That needs new blood. He needs new blood. I don't think there's a lot wrong. I think it's just confidence in the players. I think Jürgen, even little things. The other day I saw him, it might have been yesterday, doing a press conference without his hat on. And he might be thinking, this bloody ass, not giving me any look. I went to a match last night, right, listen to this, Plymouth Argyle, Exeter. What a derby.
Did you stay dry?
16,500. Listen, so Amy and William at side of me, and Amy had a blanket. So she put it over William's thingy, so we were second half. It's absolutely blowing in on us. So, Dad, do you want a blanket? I said, I can't put a blanket on. So she said, and it started. So I said, yeah, come on, Jamie, give me that blanket. And Exeter scored 2-1. So I'm looking at it and I said, it's that bloody blanket, Amy. Take it back here. And then they equalised and went on and scored 4. I blamed the blanket. Now, managers are the same. Managers blame things, you know. And Klopp might have thought, hey, let me take my hat off for a bloody... Let's do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little things. Little superstitions.
These little tokens.
You can't tell me that we're not all the same.
And that's the great thing, that the different levels. Yeah. That's why I always... used to make me smile latterly as I'd come out of football and looking back on your experiences where you work all week and you do, I don't know, set pieces on a Friday for the best part of an hour. Yet the last thing that your manager will still say as you run out is good luck. So you're kind of thinking, well, hang on. So if we're going to like base it all on luck, we might as well just do 5 a-sides all week.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think nowadays everything's computer. You know, yeah. The manager has very little... In that respect, regarding the coach's set pieces, you know, they have set piece experts now, don't they? And throwing experts and all sorts of rubbish. Well, you can't tell me that's any better than... I don't accept that, no. It might get a job for another guy to do something, but I don't accept that.
It does.
So it's... But now, just quickly going back to that, David, last night, that game, a Devon derby. Fabulous atmosphere, terrible conditions. And I saw Stephen Schumacher after and... It does make me, I do feel, it's really in a good place, the club at the moment. And he's a cracking young manager. But when I look at him, I just think about myself when I was his age. He's so excited with the game and so wants to, you know, and it's a really good place to be at the moment down at Plymouth. So long may that continue.
Yes, indeed, they're absolutely flying. And speaking of young managers, there's one gone into your old club, but we're not going to discuss that right now. We're going to take a little break. Right here on the You've Got to Die for 3 Points podcast. And after that, plenty more chat coming your way.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to the You've Got to Die for 3 Points podcast. Myself, David Prutton, and Neil Warnock, of course. Now, Neil, I said before the break we were going to talk about one of your former clubs. That doesn't really narrow it down, does it? Because there's that many of them. But specifically, we're going to talk about Middlesbrough. Now, there's been a change of manager there. You mentioned earlier on in the pod about Stephen Schumacher doing a tremendous job at Plymouth, and it looks as though, if with a fair wind behind the back and if results keep going their way, Plymouth will be a championship club once again. A team in the championship that you feel needs to pull its finger out somewhat is Middlesbrough. Michael Carrick's gone in there. Obviously, a stellar career across the Premier League, a touch, a little taster of what it is to be a manager at Manchester United, coming out to focus on his foundation. back in, are you surprised that we've seen Michael Carrick appointed as the Borough boss?
No, not at all. I think management at the moment, you can't really pick 4 or 5 managers to choose from at the moment. You've got to pick the best at what you can as quick as you can, because everybody seems to want them. I think Michael's had a great career. He's seen a lot happening behind the scenes. The championship will be a little bit different to what he's used to. He'll soon come to grips with that. I think by all accounts he's a lovely lad as well, and I want him to do well now. I think the group of lads that I left, I thought we could have got promotion even when I left that year. I thought we'd have got in the playoffs, and I thought we'd have won the playoffs, so I was still a little bit bitter about that, David, because I thought, you know, we got a good group. We had a lot of injuries before I left, and we were only 4 points off the playoffs, whereas I kept the manager that followed me kept saying they were 14th when I took over. He never said they were 4 points off the playoffs.
Perception.
So it was we weren't a bad side. We've got some good individual players and good as a team players. You know, people like House and Paddy McNair and Dale Fry. I brought Young Jones in, a wing back who was as exciting as
tremendous.
Anybody.
Isaiah, wasn't he?
He has. He's a lovely lad and all, and he worked his socks off and really pleased. Yes, he'll have a few games where, because young lads are like that, they go hot and cold a bit. But he's done fabulous from. So they've got the strength in certain areas. I think if I was in it, if Michael was to ring me tomorrow, which I don't suppose he will, but if he did, I would say to him, I think they're the type of players that need loving. I think they need loving a lot more than shouting at them or picking on them or, you know, not too much. I don't think there's too much wrong, mate, with them. I look at the table, I still think they should be up around the playoffs when I look at the whole league. Mm. The club, the fans, it's a fabulous occasion up there when you go to a game. So I really enjoyed it. And I think Michael will be all right. It just, we struggled to get strikers on board at the time. And I remember trying desperately to get Kiefer Moore, one of my first ones, and I could not get Kiefer Moore over the line.
Was that from the club, from you? Why didn't that come to fruition?
No, from ourselves, really. Okay. I was telling them what we needed to pay to get him over the line, but we were miles away from that. We offered him sort of 2/3 and then a little bit more. Yeah. And it went on for 4 or 5 weeks. 4 or 5 weeks where if we'd have gone in at the what they asked us for on day one, we just got him signed. But we quibbled and quibbled and tried to do it the other way to save a bit of money. And 5 weeks later, Cardiff give him the money that he wanted. Yeah. And he signed straight away. They said, oh, he's always going to sign for Cardiff. Was he held always? He would have signed for us the first week if we'd have come up with the... And then we actually, once Cardiff agreed to pay that, we agreed to match it, which was 5 weeks too late.
I mean,
are you with me? We agreed to match that after all that time. So it's a, I think you know, certain things had to change up there. And strikers, I don't think they've sorted that out at all, really. I'm not impressed really with the strike for Duncan Watmore. You have to laugh at this, David. So Duncan Watmore came to me and he was going to India. So he was going to play in India. He hadn't got a contract. I said, and Gordon Armstrong said to me, will you have a look at him, Gaffer, please? He's a lovely lad, good lad. So he came over to train with us. What a fabulous lad he is. One of the best lads I've ever had under me. And so keen to do well. And I said to him, well, listen, instead of going to India, let me see if I can get you a contract. It won't be a lot of money. And so I went to chief exec, you know, and they come back. We had two or three recruitment people then, you know, on the computers. And he come back and said, his stats don't add up, Neil. He doesn't score enough goals. I said, I'm watching him in training. Yeah. And what he does is brilliant. And we're not talking a lot of money. We're talking a tenth of what some of the players are on just to get him a contract. Now, anyhow, it went on for 4 weeks and he hadn't been paid a penny. And he came to see me. I said, Duncan, I can't. I'm going to speak to the owner. I said, and see if I can. And if I can't get anything for you, you'll have to. You know, I understand you've got to go. And I spoke to Steve, and we signed him on a very small contract. And he ended up with 10 goals last year.
Yeah.
So the stats weren't right last year. He was just a brilliant lad, and he's still the main. I think still the main striker after all. You know, they've signed Horse and Force and Hop into it.
Yeah,
and Force and Hop.
The fact with
Chuba Akpon's back.
He's
now.
Back, isn't he? Back in favour. The thing with Duncan as well, a couple of cruciate knee ligament injuries as well. I mean, that's really curtailed that kind of first portion of his career. So maybe that's why the figures didn't add up by virtue of the fact he didn't have the games to be able to play because he'd been out for such a long period of time. I mean, and you mentioned Duncan there and his perception, and again, like you say, he's a very bright, intelligent young footballer or moving through his career now. And speaking of moving through the careers, and you said about Michael Carrick, you don't suppose that he would like pick the phone up and touch base. Have you had experience of that in your career where you've had young managers ringing you up to say, look, I'm in this position, what's your thoughts? Have you encountered this before? Is that a common thing for you and younger managers?
I think it's certain lads who you know, isn't it? I've had players that used to play for me, you know, who have gone into management and they will pick my brains, which I think that's how it should be. Yeah. You should use your experience. Like I said to you, until you've actually made mistakes and done things, it's very difficult to learn from them. So, yeah, I've got probably four or five lads who ring me on a regular basis who I try and help. And, you know, if I can help, I would do. But such a great club. I mean, the training ground, wow, it was fantastic. I used to walk around it in awe, me. When I think how I used to walk the Bury in the Championship, I used to take a fork and a shovel to shovel the dog muck up off the training ground before we started training. And then you go there to Rockcliffe and see the hotel and the training facilities. I mean, he's done brilliant, Steve, for the club and the area. I mean, the area, you know, without the football club, it's so important.
Yeah, it's part of the lifeblood, isn't it? The community.
You know, he has. I think he's made mistakes and I think he'd probably hold his hand up. We all make mistakes. So, but it's a club that will bounce back.
Yeah, and you talk about it very magnanimously because, as we know, there's a finite amount of positions for managers to be in, and the rest of the managing fraternity are all out of work managers in inverted commas, aren't they? So when you see you've been at a club, you understand what a club's been like, then someone else comes in and then someone else comes in. Can you, is it kind of a sliding scale of how emotional you feel about it with different changes? Is the fella that follows you in, is that one a tough one to take? Is the fella that follows the fella that followed you in, is that a slightly easier one to take? Is it a sliding scale?
Yeah, it's dead right. Yeah, dead right. I wanted them to lose every game when I left.
Have you felt that about
the guy who come in? So, and he used to say that. And then, obviously, I keep saying the manager that followed me, but it made me laugh because all the interviews that he did, it was all the previous manager. Never mentioned my name. I thought it was brilliant. So I didn't like the way that I was asked to go. And I don't know whether you remember, but
I do.
But the thing that did it, we went to West Brom the last game I was in charge, and I remember the ball hit the goalkeeper on his face in the last minute. We'd have won that game without a miraculous save from him. And we had all the back four out, international break. And then to be told then that we were that I was leaving, I knew the new manager coming in. The chief exec, Neil Bowser, had been talking to him on a regular basis.
How did you know that then?
I knew they'd come in. Well, I think Neil even told me he'd spoke to him about a player or he'd spoke to him about this, you know. So I knew they were in contact. Okay. And then the Kieran Scott come in as director of football or whatever it is, head of football recruitment or what have you. I don't know what it is really. And you know, as a manager, when somebody doesn't look you in the eyes, you know he's not one of you. You're not one of his fans. So the writing was on the wall. But I think if Steve had been a bit stronger, I think we'd have gone up me that year. But you know, it's their club, and they do. You know, he has to support his own staff, and that's what they come to. They come to the conclusion that the change was there to be made. And then the next day, I remember going back that night on the Saturday night from West Brom with the players. Mm. You know, great player. They were a really super group. Went back, and then next morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, I went straight in to clear my desk. And the security guy said, "I'm sorry, you can't come in."
What?
I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, I've come to clear my desk. "Oh, you can't come in, Kieran Scott and the manager, the new manager's having a press conference." And I thought, wow, you know, that shouldn't happen. The respect that I should have had for doing that for the club through COVID. The COVID, you know, I really, really tried it with COVID to get the club through that, the fans, to make them smile at my press conferences, to try and give them something to look forward to, you know, because it was such a horrible time, COVID. People dying left, right and centre. And, you know, I used to go to James Cook Hospital because I had a couple of blood clots as well.
Yeah, maybe so.
They were brilliant at the hospital. So it was a very emotional time. So, you know, to go in and a security guy say, "You can't come in." You know, come on. So I was disappointed in that. But now it's gone now. I want Michael to do well now. He's got a good group of lads. Yes, they need, you know, if I had a chance to talk to him, I would do. Because, I'm sure I could give him information about certain players that you can't probably pick up on the training ground. You know,
that, I mean, that's...
And I think he seems a level-headed lad.
Yeah, that's... I mean, it's good, isn't it? I mean, it's like I said, we're just a few episodes in. I think we're finding our rhythm. It's nice to touch on things on a weekly basis. Also, obviously, given geographical restrictions sometimes, you're very much almost in France. I'm almost very much in Scotland. And to meet in London the other week was great fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. And my daughter, Amy, she's got everybody in Truro Hospital. They're all watching our podcast. Is that, now, David, so.
Is that helping people? Or?
I don't know. I'll let you know on that later on if it's healthy or not.
Could be the best way to cut NHS waiting list down.
People all age. Yeah. And you've got people all age. I'm glad they're enjoying it. And we've got to try and make people laugh, haven't we?
Of course.
Or try and give them something interesting. And big thank you to everybody that's been watching, because I do enjoy these, you know, coming in my office now. It's a little bit bare at the moment down here, but... you know, I'm sure they don't mind me doing it in the office I can't keep coming up to London for 2 days just to talk to you, Dave. Not when I can have a walk round here.
And you can, yes, and you can take the wonderful sights down there. Do you know what, Neil? That seems like a perfect place to pause this episode of Die for 3 Points. As ever, it's a pleasure for you to join us, the listening public, that appreciate the time that you take. And if you do like this, please like it, share, subscribe, and rate the podcast. And myself and Neil will listen to you, talk to you. We shall share our views with you on the very next Die for 3 Points. Neil, take care of yourself. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Dave. Speak to you soon.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.